I'm Dustin Zahn, and this is Trainwrecks. Today on the show, we have a returning guest. His name is Matrix Man. He was on the last go-round with Stoic Mass. And when I decided to get the show going again, you know, I started putting together a list of people I want to get on the show, short-term, long-term, all that kind of shit. And Charlie was at the top. So I'm really glad that he's back. If you don't know who he is, he's primarily known as a techno producer. As you find out today, he's got more to it than that. He was pretty busy in the 20 teens. He did a little production work for this band called Depeche Mode. Don't know if you've ever heard of them. Aside from that, he had a bunch of singles on labels such as Delft and Deckmantle. And then he kind of blew his shit up on Ghostly International with an album called Homesick back in 2015. He's done a bunch of stuff since then. He started his own label called The Grid, which... I just realized I completely forgot to talk about in this interview, but whatever, go check it out. And he recently released what he argues is not an album, but a collection of tracks called Dust World. That's on his Bandcamp, so if you're curious about what he's up to, check all of it out. Hey, what do you got going on the last weekend of July? July 26th to the 28th. If you got nothing going on and you're in America, or you just got loads of money and you want to fly to America, you should come to this little festival that we're doing called The Great Beyond. It's been happening for a handful of years now. I do it alongside my partners, Steve and Jasmine, over at IntelliFunk. And we try to specialize in the trippiest of house and techno music. It's a great time if you like outdoor festivals that aren't too big. It's a little primitive. You get to pet baby goats and all that kind of fun stuff. Super chill time, you know, and then there's also a hotel nearby, about 20 minutes away. We have a shuttle that goes to and from the hotel for free, so you don't have to drive anywhere. If you're flying in, you don't even have to rent a rental car. We got a bus that'll take you from the airport out to the festival and the hotel and bring you back there. That was a pain in the ass to put together, but it works, and it's been pretty sweet. Yeah, okay, great, Dustin. Who the fuck's playing? We got Alton Boss, BMG, Centrific, Clarice Kumski, Daniel Bell, Detroit Techno Militia, 2x4, DJ Hyperactive, DJ Fatty, myself, GGFM, Lindsay Herbert, Low Front, Lychee, Jay York, Neil Overland, Polygonia, Rue, Rod Hod, Sandrian, Sean J. Wright, Steve Rockmod, Turnian Sound, and of course, Wada Igarashi. And that's not all, man. I mean, there's like another 15 other people on, you know, our little tier two, which, you know, everybody's the same, man. It doesn't matter. On top of that, we have about another, I don't know, 65, 70 acts. On top of that, we have another 65 to 70 acts that span the course of 3 days. Yeah, that's right. The party just doesn't stop, man. It goes nonstop from 10 a.m. on Friday till Sunday night at 10 p.m. And then, hey, man, when it comes to Monday morning by 10 a.m., you got to get your ass out of the campground. We love you, but it's enough. You got to go. We want to tear shit down. We want to clean. And we want to go home and do nothing for a week. Anyway, you got to come out. Tickets are on sale now. GreatBeyond.us. If you got any questions, write in, write us. We'll answer whatever you want to know. And like we said, with transportation, we got you covered. If you're one of those guys or girls or whomever saying, man, fuck the Great Beyond, I'm going to Movement Festival. Listen, I can't blame you. I think if you're an American that's a techno fan, you got to go to Detroit at least once for the festival. It is a rite of passage. Good news is we're doing a party there too. Friday, May 24th at Leland City Club, we're teaming up with Blank Code for the, I don't know, third or fourth anniversary of our Meta to Physica party. When we first started doing it, I was a little worried that it was going to be like this, meet and greet industry week type thing, and it's definitely not. It kind of turns into a face plant right away. It's a really good time, and it keeps growing thanks to people who are supporting us. And I really think you should make an effort to come out if you're going to be arriving on Friday night. This year, we kind of decided that we're going to do this, old versus new thing. So you got a couple of old fuckers like myself. And, we got some of the new generation. We'll focus on the new names. You got Orby, Renee Wise, Mary Yusefskaya, and many more that you can find if you go to Resident Advisor and search for the event. Basically, you know, tickets are, they're going quickly. They're going to get more expensive and you don't want to miss out on this. I recommend just going, buying tickets. And if it doesn't work out, resell the tickets, you know, sell them, make a little money. I don't give a shit. I've been advised that you cannot actually sell the tickets and make money. That's actually a bad thing. Anyway, you know what to do. Buy those tickets, come say hello, party your ass off. Have a good one. All right, man. Thanks for coming back to the show. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Last time was fucking, I don't know, six, 7 years ago at least.
Jesus, time flies, man.
I had to start this thing up again and... one of the first people that I wanted to have back on was Charlie, so thanks for doing it.
I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be back.
It's been a pretty wild 6-7 years since then. you've been on the road a hell of a lot, so I'm sure like you kind of have a different perspective probably on some things. Like either you've learned to appreciate things more or realize that they're not as important to you as they were at some point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'd like to get into some of that today for sure. But let me get to this here. Let's just jump into it. Like, what are you turning to for inspiration these days? It doesn't even have to be musically necessary, but
for inspiration, that's a good question. I mean, there's always the usual suspects like science fiction. Very, you know, I enjoy reading science fiction quite a lot. Like, I'm into Charles Stross, Ian Banks, these sort of like hyper futuristic, maybe like even a bit. Low-key, it would be considered hard sci-fi because some of that stuff gets a little technical at times, but especially the Charles Stross stuff.
Any particular books?
Jesus, I'm drawing blanks now that I'm asked about. I mean, the whole Culture series is fire. Accelerando is an exceptional, it's one of my favorite books, Accelerando. What else? I mean, yeah, so there's the science fiction realm, like literature-wise, because a lot of that stuff seems to be somewhat prescient and offers possibilities for how things are going to unfold for humanity in the not so distant future, considering how fast everything's moving with AI. Then there's, I mean, I enjoy the apocalyptic series as well. I just started watching The Last of Us, and that I find it incredibly
really
exciting.
Great show. And I mean, like, I played the game, I loved it. They kind of nailed it, you know.
I haven't played the game. I heard the game. My brother told me that the game is actually better than the series, but I need
it to. It is. But I mean, but like this, the series did a damn good job. And I think anybody that is, because it's really like a, you know, 20-hour long movie that you sometimes kill people.
Yeah.
You know, but like the storytelling's incredible. Yeah. Second part, like if you're liking the show, the second game where the story goes, it's really insane. It pissed off like a lot of incels online and stuff, but it's
good.
It's
like fucking,
yeah, exactly. Let's continue with that.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, I mean, what else is there? I've been listening to this, Jean-Michel Gaudier, science fiction dude, author's quasi podcast slash YouTube, channel. And he mentioned a Battlestar Galactica series.
It's coming back.
I had never actually watched the 2004 one. So when he mentioned that he actually enjoyed it, I was like, oh, damn, I need to give it a chance. Because I think I initially tried to watch it and just turned it off. Thought it was terrible. But then when I got into it, it's kind of like Star Trek, but a little bit more twisted and darker. So I was like, I'm on the second season of that, and I find it highly inspiring. And so, yeah, that's all these things outside of music. Music-wise, in terms of where do I draw, were you going to say, mention something about Battlestar Galactica?
I could go on, but honestly, people should just discover it on their own. But one thing before you jump into music, I want to say if you're reading these books or listening to these podcasts and stuff that are, you know, considered really not knowledgeable, but like really plausible ideas to the future, as you read them, do you read this and you're like, well, we've already proven in recent years that this book is kind of irrelevant, like it's flip phone equivalent of information, or you're like, wow, it could still go this way. You know what I mean? Because it's like sometimes sci-fi outdates itself with the with technology. Yeah, I mean,
like it's kind of funny. Sometimes you'll be watching science fiction movies, and then they'll from back in the day, and they'll be inserting some sort of tape, like cartridge or something, which clearly we're not going to be using in the distant future.
Sure.
So some tropes don't pan out to be accurate, but in terms of, you know, the general trajectory where we're going, especially with with AI and emergent AGI and ASI and all that stuff, it looks, I feel like the timeline has been accelerated, if anything. So it does, I mean, in terms of like an interesting time to live in, I think we couldn't have had better timing, because it does feel like we're on the cusp of something quite substantial. I thought the timeline was that previously way, way further down the line. I mean,
totally.
Ray Kurzweil's predictions were like
singularity and all that,
et cetera, were 2040. And I feel like all that stuff has been, it's actually unfolding at a quicker pace than we anticipated or can handle even. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, the whole adage, may you live in interesting times, is like kind of hilarious. Cause like we're living in some wild ass times, I think.
Big time, man.
For better or for worse.
I was just going to say, yeah, usually for worse, but you know, I'm trying to stay positive about it all. So what about music though?
Music. So I have in the, I guess, yeah, circling back to what you said about me being gigging heavily for the last 6-7 years, I think in getting my life sort of taken over by techno, it was never my intention only to focus on techno. That just happens to be the path that sort of transpired, or I just fell into, or for whatever reason, or I guess for a number of factors. But I initially got into drum and bass, and then my first forays with production were with gangster rap, etc. I've never ever really felt confined to one genre. So the idea of me fully dedicating to only one type of music is absurd, actually. So one of the benefits to the pandemic was that I was allowed an excess of time, as we all were, in which I could actually start to explore these different palettes. And I basically, after things reopened and started up again, kind of got sucked back up into the techno machine, as it were. But recently I've been basically making a shit ton of other music that is non-techno based, and I'm on the verge of, I'm basically about to send off an album in the next couple of days that's UK garage, or garage as the Americans say, as the Yanks say, garage / dubstep bass with some drill and some rapping on it as well. So I basically,
from you or from others?
From others. Okay. And it's some real cutthroat, futuristic, and quite dark stuff. So I'm deriving, and that's one of many things that I've sort of seen through. I've also got this post punk stuff that I was able to finally like sort of get the confidence to release stuff with me singing and playing instruments on. That a track came out on a Curses compilation last year, with sort of some dark, I guess it's minimal wave / minimal synth, okay, or some post-punk ish. Basically, yeah, techno, long story short, techno really derailed all these disparate various interests of mine. And so I've been getting my excitement from picking that up where I left off, which, and yeah, it sounds kind of maniacal, but it's a lot of different music, because I've never wanted to define or limit myself, but I'm really excited.
I get it, man. I mean, I've built up a nice, healthy little stash of producing, writing, engineer credits in the last 6 years, and nice stuff outside of techno, and I haven't really been able to do a whole lot of it, like you said, since things started opening up. I mean, I did do...
it sucks, because it's like, we're grateful. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. No, yeah, to finish your sentence. And it's like, but it's like, we're grateful to have work and to have the opportunities to work, but it's also like, damn, it's a double-edged sword, because it takes us away from things that we would be doing otherwise, I guess. You know, blessing and a curse.
Yeah. Well, sorry. I think also when you spend a lot of time in the studio, it's not like you turn on the machines and you instantly have like a techno loop going. You got to like push buttons.
You got to get in the zone.
And then you hear really, something, and you're like, fuck, man, this is so cool. It would never fit in a techno track. You know what I mean? Like maybe it would be cool for a trap record or a soul record, mm-hmm, or whatever. And you're like, or you learn how to do techniques like cool vocal modulation. You're like, well, I can't. Well,
really,
you
could
do
that,
anything you want with techno, but you know, there are rules. Let's get down to it, you know, or like relevancies and trends and stuff. So you're like, this just doesn't apply right now. But you're like, I got to get my rocks off somewhere. So, you know, I think for anybody that's really passionate about production, you would get jammed up just doing one thing, right? Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I mean, well, due to the I mean, obviously, for anyone that's a techno artist, their main bread and butter is techno and stuff. And I mean, in theory, techno could be truly free. You could just like record some white noise and some field recordings and make a techno track, which actually could be quite cool. But the reality is, yeah, if you started, you know, making a dark guitar riff with a lot of chorus on it and sounded very 80s post-punk, that probably wouldn't really fit necessarily techno. So it's like, yeah, I guess that's the nice thing, is now that when I'm having these inspirations, I'm no longer limiting myself and I'm basically writing everything under the sun, which sounds crazy.
But no, I think it's the way to go. I mean, especially, you know, there's dwindling returns in the music business these days. Like you know, we're both still lucky to hit the road and make a few bucks or something like that. But, you know, you're not selling records like you used to. You're not, well, not you particularly, like everybody, you know, like you got to find the beauty in the silver lining, and it's like making music should always be enjoyable. You know what I mean? So that totally makes sense. You know, one of the questions that I wanted to ask, and I guess when I wrote it, I sort of had it more in mind with your Matrix Man alias, but it could really go for any of it. Like, is there a certain like inspiration or artistic or creative direction that you were hoping to take your music towards, you know, maybe for 2024 or 25, like be it more melodies or no hi-hats or something that is you got a buzz on for right now?
Stuff, I mean, basically, I'd say even though all these different projects I'm doing are quite far removed from each other genre-wise, there is an underlying current, an undercurrent, if you will, of darkness. And I mean, but it's not dark to the point where it's like depressing. It's like I find immense beauty in darkness and sadness and morose qualities. And to be honest, when I take a look at the world, I'm overwhelmed with a lot of the fucked up shit I see. So it's really important for me to accurately reflect the state of humanity and what and the state of affairs in the world going on, which for me is not really the brightest place. Ironically, I do get some hope from, or some sort of, it can be quite cathartic and beautiful in and of itself. So it's not to say it's in, you know, innately depressing or anything, but there's a lot of, yeah, the one thing that's exciting me the most is some cold, fucked up, futuristic, dark ass shit, absolutely, for lack of a better explanation.
Leaning into what's happening, right?
Exactly.
Right on. And I guess that's like, would you say that's something that's being applied across the board to all of your music, or?
100%. I mean, so to give you a rundown of stuff that's in the works. So this one album is very much UK bass oriented. And of course that is, quite apocalyptic and very it's cold and it's got a dark edge to it, and as does the post-punk stuff is definitely that. I've got a basically cachet of post-punk stuff that I'm going to be releasing following this UK based stuff. After that, there's a dub reggae album. It's quite a lot of material. This stuff that's been accruing for years that finally I have the means to the focus rather to see it through. And it sounds like the ramblings of a madman, so I won't bore you with all these plans. But basically, all these things do have their own sort of sensibility, where it's like just a reflection of how I see the world. So there are unifying factors, despite the fact that they are, you know, very different genre wise. You know?
So they all have their own thing, but there's a similar sonic identity that
100%.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it touches on some. It's basically, I'm always seeking for these that's sort of those melodies that make you either snarl your face up or can be quite beautiful but also haunting. Like there's some sort of elusive ephemeral quality that I'm trying to, some sort of ghost in the shell, if you will, that I'm trying to encapsulate and translate. And I think it, more or less I'm getting closer towards that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, especially, you know, on the Matrix Man techno stuff, it's pretty fucking nihilistic and raw what you're doing. But at the same time, like, especially the some of the bigger tracks or the ones that seem to hit heavier for people, it still has a feeling or a vibe to it that can't be ignored. And I think a lot of times when you get a lot of techno records or promos these days, like everything's neatly in place and they, for all intents and purposes, sound great or whatever. But I think the producer forgets that there should be like a certain mood or a feeling attached to it.
And this is really hard to quantify. I think I've thought about this quite a lot because I'll listen to tracks from many people and they're excellent. They're well executed ideas, excellently made. But if you don't have this weird, this little spark, this twisted, the sense of like, I'm gonna inject some soul, some spirit, and it's a real sort of zen like satori type notion. Like the moment you try to describe it, it's gone. It's really elusive. But there is something that I think everyone can some more or less feel to some extent, and that is missing from the majority of music. So when that, I think, is one of the defining moments of someone's career. It's like, okay, you can make great tracks, but does it have that spark? And that's something that I've been able to connect with. I think it's something primal and almost even shamanic, and it's not something necessarily that can be taught through YouTube tutorials or something. It's like something that you have to dig deep within.
It's inherent.
Inherent. You have to ask, why am I doing this? What do I want? And if you're doing it for the right reasons, then the magic can happen, but it can't be, it's very difficult to achieve with a paint by numbers approach, I would say.
Definitely. And then like I've noticed, well, probably it'll come up a number of times on this show, but lately I've been kind of going back on this analogy. I call it like a lot of techno music right now, like hotel room techno. And the way it is like you walk into the hotel room, right? And you're like, actually, this is nice. There's the couch is comfortable. Everything looks cool. It's kind of stylish. It's clean. Everything is just nice and tight. There's really nothing wrong with it, but nobody lives here. There's no soul. Mm. And the minute that you walk out that door again, you will never remember that hotel room again. You know what I mean? And like, I feel that way when I listen to a lot of records that come in. I'm like, I don't have anything to complain about, but I'll never remember this. And I can't tell that someone is here.
A lot of that stuff is very forgettable. I mean, it's interesting. So technology has ushered in all these vast possibilities. I mean, on the bright side, kids are so lucky these days. They have no, I mean, you basically can find a step-by-step guide for any task you can imagine of in totally. Ableton, whatever your DAW of choice is. But when we were kids, that did not exist. You had to go, part of the thing that was so daunting was going and buying the kit. Samplers, linking it up with Cubase, figuring out how MIDI worked and stuff like that. I was overwhelmed at the time when I was making my first forays into this. But so it is great that all this stuff is now instantly accessible, and that is beautiful to sort of democratize the playing field. However, on the other hand, that also ushers in, you know, basically an ocean of somewhat boring music.
Totally. Well, you brought up a really interesting term, and I wasn't planning on going there, but I think we should for sure right now, like democratizing music, meaning like maybe it's not so important about it being on like a reputable or a big label anymore, and you're just like, you know what, I just made this shit, and tomorrow it's coming out on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Growing up as a fan of like punk rock and stuff, there's something super badass about that to me. Like if you can pull it off, like amazing, you know, why get all these other people involved that kind of just want to chip away at what you have. At the same time, you know, I bought a lot of Bandcamp music, especially during the pandemic and stuff, just to like spread it around and support people and whatnot. And then when I'm like, wow, man, this track is awesome. It's cool. And then I try to like put it in the mix or on the CDJs, and you realize like how actually shitty it sounds. Like the sound quality, like the bass isn't quite there, or it doesn't hit, or there's not enough compression. And I'm not trying to be super anal about things, but I do believe that, you know, a proper A&R person at a record label would kind of catch this stuff. And I know some people don't like to receive notes from the record label, but good record labels will be able to tell you, like, listen, you should really make this track 2 minutes shorter, or like, I think you're going to want to bring that vocal up. Like, just having that experience to help you get that product mm-hmm. from good to great. And
it's interesting. I shifted mentioned something I thought was quite poignant. He was like, you know, he was like, when he invites an artist to release on his label, he gives them no notes, gives them free rein to do what they do. And that is like that is true artistic trust in its best case example. And I think that actually works for when you're working with people that are quite experienced and have their vision solidified and their skill set also under their belt, so to speak. So the issue is, in my experience, it's like there are a lot of, when people are just starting out, there are many people that actually do need the guidance, or maybe are actually even looking for it. Because if, for example, there could be an artist that has 80 demos and maybe they are unsure which ones are the strongest ones, and an outside objective ear can help them sort of put their best foot forward. So there are times where it can be of immense value to get some input. But I mean, I obviously appreciate Shifted's approach, because it's like that's the ideal situation where you're like, yeah, I give you free rein to we're putting out what you want to put out. And that is refreshing, because I've had people sort of over police things and give me too much feedback in the past, and life would have been a lot easier had I been afforded such trust.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think the thing also that's important to, you know, put out there is with Shifted's label, and I assume more on, like, let's say the more experimental drone-y side, that's really like an open canvas where it's like the picture can be whatever it wants. Mm-hmm. But when you start talking about club tools that got to like get asses going on the floor and stuff like that, you know, that is a little different. And not saying like, oh, you should replace that hi-hat or something. Some people get really anal with notes, but like they just say, I know that this track just drags on too long or something. And when it's there to be a purpose, like a designer tool, that's a thing. You know what I mean?
100%, especially for the stuff that's club oriented, it needs to be, if it's the desire is to be played, then it needs to, you know, fulfill all those criteria.
Yeah. So that being said, I'm sure you get a lot of people sending music to you.
Surprisingly not.
No? Okay. Well, let's scratch that part, but let's assume that they do. Like, what do you notice is like, is there anything that you commonly see where you're just like, man, I wish more producers knew to do more of this or less of this, or like, this is where they always get hung up?
This is a tough one. I mean, it's interesting that a lot of the music I get sent has no business even landing in my inbox, just not because it's bad necessarily.
It's just different.
It's just fully different. I'm like, have they even listened to anything I've played ever in my entire life? Evidently not, because they would realize I wouldn't play it in a million years.
Sure.
Or even much less consider releasing it. I get a lot of decent tracks that are just, they're like, eh. If I'm like, okay, it's almost there, but not quite that's lacking that sort of
what are they missing?
Yeah, I don't. That's
a tough one.
That's a real tough one. I think it's once again, it might be people making decent music, but it's not mind blowing. But that's a hard question. What is the difference between decent, you know, art and mind blowing art? That's what I can't. Sometimes it's just like lacking that special.
Something
excitement, I guess. I don't know. And I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, not just because everyone can do something doesn't mean everyone should do it in some sense. But you know, if it brings someone joy, that's great. And maybe these people should probably just be releasing music on their own. But if it's like, if it's, I don't know, it's a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, like, for example, I'm sure we both have tracks where we're like, listen, this track is unremarkable in every way, but somehow I find myself playing it more often than not, because like it's just this really, it is a great connector tool between these other two tracks I want to get going, or like, you
tools,
know what I mean?
Tools do play in a minute. Like, I have a lot of I do not discount tracks that do not do a lot, because actually that is something that I'm looking for. I'm looking for these bridges, and basically DJ tools play a vital role. So that's a tricky one too. Like, it's you know, actually, I wish I would get more tools that are just like really steady running loops that are not doing a lot. But it's like, even a good DJ tool is actually somewhat of an elusive thing to to nail, I think, rather than just making a track that's sort of boring.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, especially anything when you strip it down or get minimalistic, like, I was telling somebody recently, it's insane, the whole concept of it, like, where you work so hard to make something do so little that it has a big result. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, that's a tough, I mean, yeah, minimalism, the balance, it does become the sort of zen like struggle of like doing just the right amount of stuff and or knowing, yeah, I guess less is more in a lot of cases, and that's a hard thing for people to execute. I mean, I feel like I've actually made a career doing somewhat minimalist stuff, but yeah, easier said than done.
Yeah. What's your stand on the BPM war?
You know, that's a tough one. I mean, the kids these days do like hard and fast, particularly fast. And me personally, I would say my sweet spot is like 138. That's where I like to stay.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, due to dickheads playing before me at 155 or whatever the fuck, Jesus Christ,
it gets a lot. Yeah.
Then my compromise would be, okay, I'll play like one. If I'm really in a hard way and I can see I'm in danger of losing people, I might start at 145 and go down to 142 or something. But even, I'm like shaking my head the whole time. This has happened more times than I could count. And it's obviously bad planning on behalf of the promoter, because if they had half a brain, they would put my sluggish old man ass before the little speed demons. You know, fair play to them. They're doing what they want.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't necessarily have a problem with the music being that fast. Personally, like, I think everybody has an inherent sort of speed, even if you're just a listener of music. You're like, yo, I don't like fast music. Or some people just like folk music, you know, singer-songwriter shit that's slow. Like, we all have our own pace. It's especially important as a DJ because that's your whole ass job. I don't mind. I don't mind. Like, for some reason, like an Advent or a Rob Hood record could sound amazing at 145. So it's not even, I don't even really rate BPM as being the problem. I just wish people would realize, like, yo, you have a really cool track here, cool sounds. It doesn't actually need to be that fast. It could be still 137 or something, and maybe even more effective, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the BPM is, I guess, relative in a sense, because, I mean, there's some like fire ass tracks from the 90s, some sort of Millsian type stuff that is approaching 150, but some Advent stuff as well. I can't remember, one of the sketches I like is way up there. It might be close to 150. So there's techno in that realm. So I guess, and there could be tracks that, yeah, are slower that feel somewhat faster just due to the nature of how they how they're arranged. So I guess, yeah, it is somewhat subjective, isn't it?
Totally. I want to go back a bit. I remember you were saying that, you know, you're working on, well, you admitted you're working on multiple albums.
Yeah, it sounds maniacal, but yes, yeah, technically.
Well, no, because, I mean, I've kind of tried to do that too, and I realize that maybe I'm not as good at multitasking as I'd like to be, but that's where it's at. Album concepts, like, do you know how, like, what's your process for arriving at it? Do you kind of just throw shit at the wall until you figure out, like, hey, I think there's something here and I need to chase it? Or do you visualize something in your head and you're like, this is exactly what I have to work on and everything else is, you know, in the studio, I'm not going to chase that patch because it doesn't fit this vision or something?
For the album process, it definitely is some sort of grander vibe, that one, some sort of like unifying vibe between all the tracks that you're aiming for. So there's some, it's whether it's defined or constrained by the genre or the mood, or I guess there's some goal in mind. And I guess it kind of, these things, I don't necessarily think about them consciously. They just tend to unravel naturally. I think there's the subconscious actually takes over, and then you just kind of trust your instinct and intuition, and just if you're in that headspace, you don't have to think about it too much concretely. It just flows in that direction, because you, and then as you're doing it, you're like, well, I mean, what's interesting, so the thing I'm about to release next, in the next, which is going to presumably come out in February, if I can get it off to mastering the next day or two. It's got equal parts of UK garage and then the rest of dubstep, but they also got some drill and some, even a new genre called hood trap, which is like some futuristic jerk type beats basically, but it's all UK oriented. And the thing is, as you're going along, I'm like, okay, basically the dubstep stuff came about sort of happenstance. I didn't set out to make dubstep, but as I was making garage, I was also thinking, man, you know, it would fit this really well, some like vintage Digital Mystics Mala era type stuff, because I've always been long fascinated.
It's so, always the best stuff from that. Ooh, yeah.
So good and so sparse and dystopian and cold, and I'm like, you know,
yeah.
I always wanted to try my hand at that, and I was like, why shouldn't I? It's like, I know it's sort of taboo for a techno dude to be like, okay, here's a bunch of, you know, garage and dubstep tracks, but I'm like, that idea occurred as I'm making the two-step tracks. I'm like, actually, what would round out this package is something else. And then also I realized there needed to be some UK rap type stuff as well. And that all, it's almost like, you know, filling in a canvas. Like, yeah, this, I've neglected this part. This, it could use a bit more sure. of this. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm in the same boat, and like, I've commonly multiple times like started albums and get like 6-7 tracks in or something, and then I kind of lose steam on it. I'm like, you know what, there's maybe an EP here, we'll take those for that and ditch the rest, or just ditch the whole thing. I'm trying to work on an album right now that's very focused on like trying to make things as distorted as possible, but
distorted as possible,
but then cleaning it up so it's like palatable, you know what I mean, where it's just part of the song or whatever, versus like, oh my god, this is annoying. You know what I mean? I don't want it to sound like a vacuum cleaner in your ears or something. But then I also like, I think it should be funky and colorful and stuff like that, so I'm trying to keep things on that sound palette. But then I don't know, I just, for me, once I get into like an album mindset, everything else has to follow suit with that. I kind of want to live that out, and you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, have it be a whole ass piece and not just something that I'm working on, you know, 2 days a week or something like that. Cause that's I think how a lot of uninspired albums happen. You're just like, well, I made these 10 tracks. I got my intro, my outro, boom, we're out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That, and so, that is quite an important thing. For example, so when I dropped Dust World, which I think Resident Advisor called it an album or something, they referred to it as an album. An album for me starts from the outset with the intention, and my intent was never to, when I literally had a bunch of tracks, that's why I called it simply a compilation. Yeah. Collaboration with the different voices in my head. Because there was some thematic science fiction aspect to the techno. It was also futuristic ass techno, but it was, in my mind, it wasn't an album. It was just some cool shit to play some motherfuckers at home, you know? Like,
totally.
I wouldn't even play those tracks in the club, to be honest. It's like, it's, a lot of stuff is too, I don't know. Actually, not some of our club ready.
Yeah, for sure.
But I digress. The point was, that was not an album. That was simply an assortment of tracks, a compilation of tracks. Whereas this stuff, I'm like, nah, actually, going in from the start, you know, with the idea of the album in mind, and then saying finish, boom.
Mm-hmm. I get it. I mean, in a way, I kind of think that's sort of what techno or dance music albums should be. Like, even my last album on records, it was very cohesive because I used basically one or two synths and one drum machine, and I kind of wanted to treat each instrument as like a band member, so to speak. So, nice. You know what I mean? And kind of reusing the same patch over and over, you know,
so nice.
You get used to that. But really, I mean, it's not like we're doing vocals and it's always like, you know, 4-4 beats and shit like that for the most part on a lot of these albums, including mine. So like, maybe it should just be almost like, you know, like in the hip hop world, it'd be like, this is a mixtape where it's all like the unreleased sketches or the anthology series, or you know what I mean, where you got shit that's like a collection of art. Like, you, if you're an artist, you would have a gallery show, you know what I mean, where it's pieces from that era. And I guess maybe that's, I'm thinking what a techno album should be. Like, this is just where my head was at for the summer of 2024 or something. You know what I mean? And hopefully it's good, you know?
Yeah, I think, it's an interesting thing, because you can tell when the majority of albums I get sent in my promo folder on email, which rest in peace. I need to revive that. I need to check my promos again. I've been so bad. So disrespectful to all these people sending me their lovely music. I just honestly just have to check out sometimes, like not, yeah. I actually should check out the promos, but I have to literally check out and not be involved just to get in my own headspace at times. So I will get back to that. Actually this weekend probably, but anyhow, a lot of people do just sort of, you know, pack together some tracks. But yeah, that's an album, but with it is a far cry from something that was conceptually thought of, like the way you were talking about with yours.
Yeah, I mean, well, so, you know, when it comes down to it, like, are you embracing like new approaches to it, like for example AI, things like that? How do you feel about AI? Actually, are you into it? Does it suck?
I think it's sick. I think it's fucking super sick. I mean, there's a lot of cool tools. I mean, if you're into sampling and stuff, like Ultimate Vocal Remover is free, and it has all these different algorithms to separate voices and instrumentation from tracks. So basically, as far as sampling is concerned, I mean, it's just a plethora. You could open up a disco track, remove the drums, you could be making, if you're into like sort of old school hard groove, Jeff Mills type techno, you could be making shit for days in ways that were previously unimaginable. So there are a lot of people that have some trepidation about it and are worried about it replacing jobs and stuff. I think all the attempts that I've heard from AI to make music are absolutely awful. They're dog shit. No. I think the tools are really powerful. So
you got to treat it like a tool.
Exactly.
And then, but I mean, okay, so AI and society, you know, for example, remember when ChatGPT first came out and everybody's like, the fucking world's over, blah, blah, blah. What a disappointment it turned out to be. Like, I actually tried it last night. We got to do, you know, like, because we have our festival and not a lot of people, we bring in some pretty niche stuff. So we got to do these little biographies for people to figure out who some of these people are. And I didn't really want to write them. So I was like, let's just see what ChatGPT has to say. And I plugged it in. And they're like, first of all, it's like, well, sir, I haven't been updated since January 2022. And I think they want you to pay if you want even more.
Oh, yeah, you have to pay for the nice one.
You know, you just plug in a few things and it's just like, it feels so dead. It feels like if you had to give someone some medication for like bipolarism or something, and then it just sucks the whole life out and they're just kind of numb. I feel like that's what they did to ChatGPT. They neutered it.
They nerfed it. They nerfed it, basically. I think that's the term. And it, I mean, what previously was super strong now has been throttled. And of course, it's they want to make money. So a friend, Elad Magdazi, made some attempts at AI bios. And they looked like someone that was excited to write, but didn't quite have a grasp on the subtle nuance. I mean, it was well written, but it lacked personality. I thought it was actually hilarious. And it does feel like we're in an AI winter is the term, where things, well, I guess when things plateau, but who knows? I mean, I do feel like things are sort of compounding and moving exponentially. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some wild ass, sort of exponential growth.
It's evident, inevitable.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think everybody's kind of fearful, but I don't think really anybody cares until the sex robots come around. You know what I mean? Then, you know,
until they lose their jobs, which is hopefully
losing our jobs, man. Just get used to it. Like, listen, we're all going to lose our jobs and we're all going to have some life threatening disease. That's humanity in 2024. Like, the knife is coming for you, period. Like, the quicker that you come to terms with that, like, there's a certain piece where you start to appreciate everything a little bit more. Like,
I definitely, I mean, after the pandemic, and then even, you know, I mean, now I've been in the game professionally for over 10 years. So it's like, I'm not a young buck. I'm not one of these young, hot, trendy names. So it's like, I've weathered some storms in a sense. And I've seen things go, I've seen the cycles, you know, I mean, even I can imagine even Mills had years, probably mid 2000s, where I'm not sure how much he was gigging, honestly.
Most of those guys will admit to you that you can't have careers that are decades long without having some, you know, down points, you know? You definitely had mine. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's inevitable no matter how much of a badass you are, you know?
Yeah.
But go on.
Yeah, I mean, and the question is like, what in the face of such adversity, do you continue? Do you still have a dog in the fight? I feel like, or do you just sort of pack up and walk away? My thing is, I love music too much. Even if I went fully broke and had to go get a job in a record shop or something, I would be doing the exact same shit I'm doing now. I'd be working the absolute minimum I needed to pay bills and focusing the rest on music. And that's what I did before, and that's what I will continue to do regardless. So I'm a lifer in that sense, you know. But I do understand people who pack up their bags and head for a more stable life.
I feel the same way, and I would probably say they're smarter than I am for it, you know. But like, I definitely realized during the pandemic, when basically we were out of work and there was no guarantee of work coming back, you know, it was frightening. But at the same time, I was like, wait a minute, this isn't all bad. Like, it went back to me being 18-year-old Dustin, where it's like, okay, wake up, make some food, smoke some weed, make some music, play video games, read a book, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, enjoy life, do cool shit, just get enough money to get by and like somehow be content with that. And you know, obviously I want a little bit more, and definitely some stability as I get older, just because you need that when you get older. But it's like, I would be pretty content with just making music and having fun and getting to enjoy the other things in my life. Like, I love playing with Midjourney AI. Mm. Like, it's a total waste of time, but we could sit here and be like, hey, let's come up with ridiculous prompts to type into it. Like, I like that kind of shit. I don't need to always do something so serious or have something that's going to benefit me in life for retirement or whatever. Mm-hmm. Probably it would be a good idea if I did, but I just don't care. I want to chill.
I mean, this is probably terrible advice. Of course, everyone should be worrying about their retirement in the future, and I'm concerned about mine as well. But I think the state of the world as we know it is changing so rapidly. With if things do progress as they're like shaping out to be with our artificial general intelligence, we're going to be living in a radically different world 20 years from now, with all sorts of things with regard to anti-aging technologies. If the majority of jobs have been replaced by AI, then we have no choice but to look at a fundamentally different system, universal basic income, all sorts of things. So no one can say for sure how this is going to unfold. It could be also turn into a total, feudalist dystopian, you know, capitalism run amok situation where it's just everyone living in squalor except for the few overlords. That's entirely possible too. But I still remain optimistic.
Well, yeah, I pretty much share the same sentiment to a degree. I think it's a little bit more like I'm not feeling too thrilled about climate change and whatnot.
Yeah, climate change sucks.
But you know, they also brought up the term. What is it? Is it like corporate feudalism or something like
that? Yes, that sounds about right.
That's a thing. And I'm like, okay, that seems accurate. I don't know. I mean, like, we definitely don't have the possibilities that our parents had, despite having like all this knowledge and information ahead of us and tools to do things. But somehow just the powers that be have kind of limited your ability to fuck with anything.
Yeah. I mean, the world we live in is completely different landscape compared to what it was for our parents. You know, they could afford, all of our parents were able to buy houses at a relatively young age
for next to nothing.
Those days are gone, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that being said, yeah, I mean, we are definitely knowing where we are in terms of, not to keep going back to AI, because it's an interesting topic, though. It does feel like we are on the cusp of, if you're looking at the exponential chart, things have ramped up considerably in a way that I don't think anyone foresaw. I think, the singularity as if you indulge in such ideas, is a lot closer than we could ever imagine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's inevitable at this point. I think the only thing that's going to slow down that kind of technology is some sort of war, which
that seems changes.
Very, yeah, one of the two, yeah. Okay, so that's really depressing shit.
I mean, well, yeah, it's interesting. Well, we're in a world full of dichotomies right now, because in terms of the technological progress that exists, like, we couldn't be a more exciting time, but yet we are. It's almost like we're in a race to discover the cure for humanity, humanity being a disease itself, basically. I mean, and that's evident by all the wars, it's just like there's chaos sort of spiraling in a sense. And there's a general feeling of like anxiety in the world, rightfully so, because it's like climate change, chaos is kicking in. People are, you know, things have exacerbated in a sense. So it's like, it really is a rush to like get our heads out of our asses and figure it out as a species. Otherwise, we're fucked.
Totally. So, you know, obviously we were just mentioning that COVID happened and we were out of work and like the world's going to shit or whatever. With all that in mind and kind of getting like a reboot and another chance at hitting the road and putting out records and stuff like that, do you find yourself taking it less for granted now?
100%. I mean, I guess it's a double-edged sword. I mean, but gigging now for over 10 years, it's like I have become a little cynical. Not every party is amazing.
It happens, yeah.
But the good parties, when they're really good, you're like, damn, that was nice.
Totally. You're like, oh, it's like it's a drug, man, you know?
It is.
It's intoxicating.
And it becomes increasingly harder to replicate. It's like, I would say one-third of my gigs are amazing. Absolutely amazing. The rest are decent.
Yeah.
I would say maybe 20% are actually kind of shitty.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, I have a slower gig schedule now. Half of it is by choice and half of it is not by choice, in full honesty. But I would say that actually, despite having less going on, the quality of my gigs has improved quite a bit, and I'm playing shows that, like, the kind of shows I've wanted to be playing, which is cool.
You're playing the right shows.
Whereas before, when I was doing like, you know, 9 or 10 gigs a month at the top of it, like you were saying, you're like, well, 5 of these are going to be probably shitty, unfortunately, because, you know, everybody's got opinions on how a party should go and not everybody's right. But anyway, you know, I was thinking about, actually, you know what? I heard a great, very honest question last night, and I feel like you and I could bond on some pretty petty shit together. Did you ever have anybody in your life that, you know, said some mean shit or pissed you off, like maybe family members or ex-girlfriend or your boss or a teacher? They're like, you're just like, fuck you, man, I'm gonna show you. And then, like, you know, now you have a little bit of success, you're like, all right, I pulled this shit off.
I had tons of adversity from all sorts of places, man. I mean, there were some family members that didn't quite understand the vision. They didn't know how committed I was. And when I told them, for example, I was like hell-bent on working with Snoop Dogg. I ended up working with YG and Ty Dolla $ign, arguably artists just as big, if not bigger, and more relevant than Snoop Dogg. So it's like,
yeah.
But when I told this to my family back in the day, they were like, you're tripping, bro. You're like, they did not see it as feasible. I refused to believe that because I was like, that was their assumptions. And the beauty of life is if you construct something, you have these elaborate goals and fantasies in your head, and if you really, really believe it and see it through in your head and actually put in the work, you'd be surprised at what you can accomplish. And basically, I still have a vast amount of things that I've yet to achieve in my life, but I've already done a lot of things that people, like work with Depeche Mode, sort of stuff that people would literally tell me I'm crazy for even imagining.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was no lack of people, you know, ex-girlfriends who totally shit on me. It was, you know, my choice, partly my poor choice for dating some toxic individuals, but these were people that were actively undermining me, telling me that I was a poser or wasn't worth shit. Fortunately, my taste and my judgment in people's characters has improved in recent years. But yeah, there's no lack of haters and salty ass motherfuckers. But it's like, you know, at the end of the day, if you see something in your mind and you want to achieve it, I'm a firm believer that you can.
Yeah, no, I agree. Or at least get pretty damn far in the process. Mm. And you got to try, because then you got to cure that curiosity, you know?
Mm.
But like for me, yeah, I had that growing up from various things, but like it started even back in high school with like my principal And my guidance counselor, you know, telling me I'm a loser. I'm like, I think the guidance counselor's job is actually the opposite of telling someone they're a loser, right?
That's fucked up. That's what he said to you?
Yeah, man. That's what I'm talking about. So that's why I was never like holding, well, I mean, I guess I'm holding grudges forever, but generally not. I don't think about it a lot. In fact, it came to mind last night, you know, and like, but yeah, there are times where I thought over the years where I actually pulled shit off, where I got to see the world or get paid to play music and party, and they said that I wouldn't amount to anything, and I'm like, fuck you, I won.
It is a beautiful, you know, a beautiful vindication, you know, I guess the best revenge is success, as they say, and it tastes so much sweeter when you've had people hating on you. And
killing them with kindness.
Exactly. I mean, I know it keeps some haters up of mine, former haters of mine. I know it keeps them up at night knowing what I've achieved. And I'm like, the thing is, think about what type of mindset you put out into the world. I personally, even for everyone that wants to achieve something, I wish them the best. I wish no harm or negative or ill will towards anyone. So like, what type of like petty, low level, low negative energy mindset is going to tell people, oh, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. It's like, nah, your thoughts are like, you know, could be a medicine to help you or a toxinous poison to you and others around you. So it's like, ultimately, I think it's imperative to be very mindful of the energy in which you direct your thoughts. Are you directing them towards something constructive or positive or counterproductive and negative?
Totally. You know, I mean, like, I've been vocal enough about, you know, like TikTok techno or whatever. I'm not a huge fan of it, but at the same time, I've got a lot of these people that I've met that do that kind of thing, really fucking nice people, and they work pretty hard at what they do. It ain't my thing. And actually, like, even though I'm not into it, I'm like, cool, go do that. I hope it doesn't really bleed over into like my world too much just because it fucks up the parties, or you know, it's like we all have environments we want to be in, and that's not mine. But even though these people are kind of going off and doing that thing, I'm like, go for it, you know? And they're attracting a crowd that was never going to be interested in what I was into anyway. In fact, they're young. I don't know these fucking 19-year-olds. So, like, why would I be upset if they're having success with that? I hope the best for them. I just don't want to be a part of it.
The hope is, I think, even people getting involved, if the point of entry is some EDM-esque hard techno that's actual garbage... We all ate garbage when we were younger. I loved McDonald's. I wouldn't touch McDonald's with a 10-foot pole now. And so my hopes are that with that point of entry, at some point, people start to dig deeper and look for something more. You know, hopefully their tastes will mature.
Oh, it's coming for sure. You know, I remember like, you know, when Deadmau5 and all that shit started blowing up in America, like end of the aughts, like 08, 09, something like that, like really blowing up. And I was sitting with some... couple triple A list techno DJs, and I was telling them from the American perspective, I'm like, yo, listen, these people came in up on this shit and now they're getting down on whatever Richie Hot and Adam Baer, and like that's gonna be like they started with that and that's what they're progressing to, and they're like, oh no, that's fucking impossible, blah. And then you see interviews like 6 months later and they're reiterating that, and they realize like, oh wait a minute, people. Like, when I came in the 90s, we were into, like, Chemical Brothers and Prodigy and stuff, and that music, for a lot of people, stands the test of time. It means a lot, you know, but there was a lot of people at the time who were like, that shit's a joke, or what, you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, you're a loser if you like Daft Punk or whatever. And it's like, everybody admits now that they like Daft Punk, but at the time, it was cool to hate on that shit, you know what I mean? Mm. So, yeah, you gotta start somewhere.
Gotta start somewhere.
And, like, even though I'm not into it, like, I want people to go on that journey. I had fun, you know?
Definitely.
Could do a couple nerdy things about the studio quick? All right. I'm guessing a lot of people want to know, like, real basics. Well, it sounds like you're in the studio a lot because you're making so much music.
Interestingly enough, because I've been doing all this vocal stuff with the various artists singing and rapping and stuff, I've set up a satellite studio at home. I've basically needed a constant connection with internet, and there's no internet at the studio. My studio is very much like made for techno, for making techno, analog techno, or I mean for the post-punk stuff. There's like guitars and bass.
How you set it up?
Yeah, and so what I've since it for the Garrett with it. Basically, when it comes to futuristic bass music or trap or drill, all that other stuff, or basically like urban music, none of the studio shit is relevant. I'm in Ableton FL Studio, lots of samples, VSTs, but for techno, of course, I get, and for other, I mean, for other music that requires it, I get a lot more organic.
Right on. And then, so I guess you already mentioned some gear. It sounds like you like a lot of outboard shit, right?
I do, but I am by no means a purist. I mean, basically this UK bass oriented album is fully in the box, fully. But I mean, all of my techno releases have always featured prominently synths or 909 drum machines or acid, you know, 303, etc. It's funny. I mean, like I get a certain knock from FL Studio, from Fruity Loops for anything drill or trap or hip hop related. I get a punch from there that I can't get with hardware and stuff. It's wild.
Yeah, man. I mean, well, I got all my first records were done in FL Studio. I used it up until like version 5 or 6, and I think it's on fucking 20 something now.
What's up there?
So, you know, I'm familiar with it, and like I know that that world is really still focused on that program.
Yeah,
you know,
it has I don't know what it is, but there's a certain thump factor, there's a knock factor to like the way I get the kicks hitting in the 808s. It sums differently, and it's not neutral. I love whatever it's doing. I love, because like in Ableton, I can make the same beat in Ableton, and it lacks something. It's really clinical.
I mean, I use Ableton. I love it, but like
Ableton is what I use 90% of the time. But for certain things,
there's something to it, and I'm not eloquent or smart enough to explain what that is. But it's prevalent, you know. And I would argue that to my death. So, obviously, creating music with synths and stuff is one thing. Do you do like a lot of processing outside the box, or once you start mixing and stuff, is that all in the box?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, my typical techno approach will be like fire up one of the synths that I like. I'm a big Waldorf XT microwave fan. I love the
great synth.
Little orange synth. It's a Jeff Mills staple for those who don't know. I get great bleeps from that. So what I'll do is I'll like harvest some parts, and then from there, and then maybe the 909 or some other one or two other things. But I don't stay out of the box too long. I will get the parts I need and go in, and then get the shit done, basically.
Yeah, I hear you. I used to try and do as much as I could, like almost perform the whole song as a live jam outside of the box and then refine it.
Can be nice.
Which my last album was kind of like that. But actually these days I'm still much more in the like, even if I get something really cool sounding and where that should just be the hook of the track, once I bring it in the computer, I purposely try to mangle it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it gets even more interesting. Like you think you've taken it far enough, but let's take it further. Yeah. And then you can, by doing that even more, you create your own identity on it, which I want to like focus on more as like readers, like that's a Zahn track. I think for you, it's quite obvious when I hear one of your tracks, you got one of those things that come like Hong Kong or one of those old records, like that's Charlie. It's gotta be, you know what I mean? You. Like you can't miss that, you know? And for me, just mangling stuff more and more, I think that's where my little sauce comes from. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's I used to be obsessed with trying to doing these long takes and going back, and what I found is I could literally I still will do long takes a lot of the time, but then what I'll end up using is this one little segment and basically end up sampling myself, and I find myself, for example, the funny thing with the analog stuff is like the way it's firing, you know, you could have the same synth running for 2 minutes. There are these subtle variations. Some people like that. Me personally, I don't. I like that shit to sound locked in like a fucking sample from
ones
the 90s.
And zeros.
I like, for example, even the 909 hats, the same hat on the upbeat. Well, some of them will have a slightly sharper transient. It's weird. And so I end up being like, man, fuck this shit. I'm not gonna have this jamming thing where it's constantly changing. I want a locked in loop, like I'm on some rockhead shit from the 90s, where I'm like, boom, loop. And I kind of got that approach from Sam. It's like Sateok does. I was surprised. A lot of his stuff would be, he would do a lot of his automation in the box. And then there's more and more ways to skin a cat. Some people can do the automation externally, which has its value, but some people do it in the box. And I find I like when it's a static loop that's not changing. I get more into the groove. But I mean, there is something to be said for someone that can do a whole track start to finish with the modulation out of the box. Like, people can do some tight shit that way too, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I ideally like to do the modulation out of the box, but as you said, it's a lot easier to correct mistakes going inwards. But that being said, you know, doing long takes and stuff, there's something you can get with two hands, like making it work out, yeah. You know what I mean? Like really playing on an 100%. Instrument, beating on the box or whatever. But there's a lot of people out there that they're like, yo, dude, I don't have any money for that shit. Like, is there a budget approach that you can think of where you're like, yo, you should get this machine and this pedal?
A budget approach?
You know?
I mean, that's a good question. Honestly, I mean, I've heard a lot of cats use just the Roland Cloud cracked and just make some sick ass shit with the 909 emulation and a few synths. If you're strapped on a budget, just get, you know, just go down the torrent lane, get whatever you need, because you can arm yourself with an arsenal. I mean, sorry, no disrespect to the software developers. I do pay for shit when I actually everything I have on my laptop is fully. You know, legit, like, but if things are skint and you're working with a low budget, I'll be get your tools by any means necessary. Rob, steal, cheat, whatever. Oh, no, I'm joking.
Why'd you just wink? Not just kidding.
Don't rob people's gear. Actually, that's bad karma.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
But, yes, you can. That's why I take that back. Not but software, fair. I'm a fan. Hey, yo, do your thing. I come from a street background where it's like that. You know, it is what it is.
Got to hustle.
But yeah, I mean, there's no lack. I mean, the Behringer stuff is tight. I think, like, you know, the Behringer 909, I think sounds better than the Roland, the fucking bitch ass Roland.
No, go off.
You know what I was gonna say? Yeah, I don't. Well, like
why do you think it sounds better?
I mean, to be honest, well, because it's analog circuitry on the bears and stuff. I would rather use the Roland Cloud 909 than the boutique. The boutique sounds like just a piece of junk to me personally. But hey,
yeah, I get it. Like, I had the TR-8, and like, I think it's definitely one of the most playable boxes because everything's on the panel.
It is.
You
a nice get, box.
You're like, dude, I got to throw this through a rat pedal or something in order to make it really bang. You know, I mean, I don't do
a window.
So yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, especially with drums, like, people think you need to have like an analog rhythm or something, which is a killer drum machine. But it's like, honestly, if you're making techno, all you need is a kick drum and a hi-hat.
And that's the thing. I think with the great thing that is now is that the barrier of entry is really it. It's accessible to everyone. Like, Alarico makes fire ass tracks in the box. You know, mm-hmm. Some people might say they would want to work with the analog stuff, but that is a luxury thing. There's nothing holding anyone back. So, like, and to be honest, the plugin, maybe you can attest to this too. The quality in plugins modeling analog synths or any vintage synths is astoundingly better than it was like 10 years ago.
It's come a long way.
Like, if I A-B stuff, a lot of stuff that would fool me.
Yeah. I mean, man, if you were to listen to my tracks over the last 10 years, like really play a bunch of them side by side, I think you could be pretty obviously tell which ones were all in the box because there's a big advantage to that for my music personally, other people, whatever, but like, shit that like maybe I was recording it in synths or something, it doesn't have that like thickness that all the digital stuff does in the box. And maybe it's just me being a dumbass I'm recording, but I'm like, honestly, most of the time I get better results just in the box anyway, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, what matters is the product and like the finished product. And it does, like, there are people, I have a shit ton of gear, but I am by no means an analog purist. If anything, I'm the opposite. I'm like, I like to use it sparingly and not rely on it too much, because when I hear some dude's modular jam session techno, I'm just like, snooze. I'm never gonna play this shit. It sounds cool. It sounds like it took you a really long time to make it. But you know, that being said, there's some people that can do some killer shit with modular. So it's by no means a diss to people. But you know,
well, that's the thing, man. Like, remember, like, maybe 2014, 2015, when every motherfucker under the sun had a modular. You know. And they were like, it was just definitely noodly salad.
It became very noodly. I mean, but the people that I guess it really is about the intention of the user. I mean, someone like Blawan makes insane tracks with his mod. Sure, he obviously, he beats that thing up. Like, that's respect. But I do think it became this fetishized thing where there's this big culture around collecting it. And it's like, yo, dog, some of those tones you're making sound like shit, bro. It's like, that is not, straight that up. Is not the wave.
No cap. No, but no, it's true. And the thing is like, I
zero
think,
cap.
Zero cap. Years later, like, I've been listening to some of this more, it's like very obviously modular techno stuff. And it's like they finally figured out how to make it cool,
yeah.
You know, in a way, and refine it. But by this point, a lot of people don't care. Like, I'll be like, oh man, I'm really into this track. They're like, oh yeah, that sounds like something that was sick in 2015. That's fine. And, but then they're like, they're kind of over it because they're listening to tribal techno now or something, yeah. Which is fine. But I'm like, fuck man, they finally figured out how to make it cool. Come on.
I know, right? That's ironic. But now, I mean, it's funny. People used to really be geeked up about their modular bass. But now you don't. It's like people don't really stress on it as much as they are. Like, don't care about it so much.
Well, nobody has the money for it anymore either. We're all like, fucking McDonald's is $14 now. What the fuck? No, I don't. You know. So the thing is what do you feel the current state of clubbing is for people before we get out of here? Like, are you?
I say club. I mean, there's still these, you know, it's interesting. I mean, obviously promoters got to keep the lights on their clubs so they gravitate towards what sells, and what sells tickets is garbage music. So that's the nature of that beast. That being said, there are always these staunch, you know, people, soldiers fighting the good fight, as it were, that are, I mean, you know, going out of their way in spite of whatever the trends are to uphold music with values and the scene that, you know, with meaning. So I feel like for the most part, I get booked by a lot of parties that are there. They're booking me in the face of all this opposition of like garbage TikTok music or whatever. So there are people that do care about true, sure. Pure techno music.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely out there. The only problem I'm finding is, like, especially, you know, in America right now, there's a... not all agents, of course, but there's like European agents especially, they want to have people come to America and do their thing, but they treat it like maybe it's Awakenings or some shit with the budget or whatever, and you're just like, listen, you don't get it. Like, America is still very underground, and like, some of these people can command $10,000 because they're like all over TikTok or whatever, but like, your person isn't going to sell 150 tickets, so like, let's just be reasonable. Mm. So there's a lot of people doing cool shit, and I think if you're doing cool shit as a DJ or a agent or whatever, you gotta like be empathetic to that. You know what I mean? Because if those people take off, then everything's fucked. You know what I mean?
100%.
You know, and like, people say, "Oh, music doesn't matter anymore. Like, it's all about what you put online." And it's like, it's pretty easy to agree with that, but at the same time, it's wrong, because if there wasn't great, cool music coming out that really keeps holding shit down at the core, then people would kind of just bounce overnight because of what's left then.
And
you know?
That for that reason, I was really sad to see Claude Young Jr. to officially retire. And I think it's a dangerous thing to do. I get it, bro. That's the scene. That's a vicious scene right now, focused on superficial bullshit. Let's not lie.
No.
It's weak as fuck. That being said, I think it's imperative that the people that are in it for the right reasons still have a dog in the fight. So it broke my heart to see him. I get it, though. It's like, bro, who wants to have to deal with this shit? Especially if a genius is being underrated and neglected by promoters. Shame on the promoters for that. But it's like, if we were, basically the scene exists because we all uphold this construct that exists only in our minds of what our vision of techno or house or whatever the. Like the real underground culture, we all collectively maintain that. And if we all abandon it, you could fucking forget it, bro. Goodbye.
Exactly, man. I can't say it any better. Awesome, man. Well, have a good one.
Thank you, bro. Thank you for having me.
Later.
It's been a pleasure.